Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to episode 414 of Geek Town Radio. I'm your host Dave, and this week I have with me
to infinity and beyond,
Matt. How you doing?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It's been a couple of weeks since you've been up. What have you been up to?
I was going to start a couple of new shows, actually. One of which you seem to have watched, but I'm kind of saving that watch time until Extraordinary Season 2 comes out. So
yes.
I've been trying to spend time catching up with certain games and stuff, because as I talked about with Robert on Gaming Talk, my backlog has gotten a lot bigger than I thought it was. So I finished my, I almost said seventh playthrough of The Last of Us 2, because obviously they had the remasters come out. One of the things I tried to do with this one was see, okay, obviously this is the full version of everything, and see, okay, where can they make cuts, where can they add new stuff and all that, and I didn't come up with an answer. I'm sure that they will figure those bits out and whatever. So I got through the end of that, and I had not a different opinion on the end, but a new perspective occurred to me, which I added to on a recent podcast. So that was that bit. So I finished that off, and then I decided to jump on the Final Fantasy VII train, because Rebirth has come out, as I'm sure some of you have seen, because it's been all over the gaming news stuff and all that. But this is Final Fantasy VII Remake, because basically the PS1 version of Final Fantasy VII was so big. I think it had two discs or something, because these JRPGs are like absolutely massive. They decided to... I think there's going to be three remake parts. So Rebirth is the second one, then there's going to be another one. They've taken like three sections of the story and expanded them a little bit. Not that you need to expand a game that's already about 90 hours or so, but there's like lore bits and pieces. And obviously now, because you're on PS4 and PS5, you can do more than when you're on PS1. So it's always good to get like those extended bits and stuff. So that's kind of what I've been dunking most of my time into, because I know it will take a bit of time to get through. Although that being said, apparently there's 18 chapters and I'm on number 7. So I'm like getting close to the halfway point. It depends how long certain chapters take to get through. It's a very good game. I can see why people really, really enjoy it. And to me, it's really the characters that stand out. Obviously, you've got Cloud with his massive sword. Mm-hmm. You've got Barrett, you've got Tifa, you've got Aerith, who isn't called Aerys, by the way. She's called Aerith, right. Which I didn't know for about 20 odd years. Then you've got Jesse, Biggs, Wedge. Essentially, the story, because I was always aware of like Final Fantasy VII's existence and, you know, some stuff about it, but I actually never really properly knew what the story was. It's essentially Barrett's kind of who is the leader of this group. Cloud is the one, obviously, that you control. And he's decided that because there's these three reactors and they're pumping out something called Marco into the world, and there's like a complicated sewage political thingamajig behind that. And it's essentially him trying to stop a greedy and also deadly, because they don't care about civilian lives, corporate company. And now and again, you cut back to this guy who's doing this bad thing, and he works for somebody else as well who he shouldn't be working for, because that means other bad things. It's not a sort of like cliche and sort of simple as it sounds, but I quite like that idea, actually, because, you know, we've talked even on this podcast about greedy companies taking money or charging too much for staff, or, you know, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But this is a bit of a mixture of government-ish sort of corruption, which isn't a new thing.
No.
Not only that, but this guy not caring if, you know, civilians die in the case of like trying to pump this Marco out, and, you know, that kind of thing. So Cloud in the story, he's an ex-soldier, and Barrett, they don't really show you at the start how it happens, but Barrett and the group basically hire him to say, hey, you know these reactors, can you come and help us? They're trying to blow them up, basically, so that Marco will stop being pumped into the system and things will be better. I like it a lot. I have heard endless things about sort of now that Rebirth's coming out, that Remake feels like a beta to Rebirth, because, but that's only to complement, not to put down Remake, but to complement Rebirth, because there's like all new systems and like things are majorly fleshed out in a new, really cool way.
Yeah.
My only real problem with it, and this isn't because it's a long game, the way the game is structured and the way that you do certain gameplay bits, it's really got some pacing issues, which I've gotten a bit used to. I was mentioning this last week on Gaming Talk. There's kind of a few parts where, like, you walk with a character to do something, right? And then they'll say, oh, cool, we've done so-and-so, now let's go back and tell so-and-so that we've done it. And sometimes in games, you'll simply just, hey, let's just not smash cut, but let's cut to black for a few seconds, and then the characters will walk back there. There's a lot of unnecessarily walk here, unnecessarily walk there, and shimmy under this and crawl under this. And it's like, some of this you could have just cut. And so it's a bit like God of War kind of does that a little bit sometimes as well, the newer games. I've kind of a little bit gotten used to the element of that. But overall, the battle system's really complicated and intriguing and difficult, but I'm up for sort of learning it. It's one of them as well where the more you progress, the more stuff you get, the more options you have, the more powerful you get, which is very cool. But I'm really more there to just see these characters, how they can get through the situation that they're trying to deal with and how that all kind of goes. So, and one of the reasons I wanted to play Remake instead of the, because you can play the original game ported to, I think it was ported to PS3 and then ported to PS4. Right. The original game doesn't have dialogue. I wanted dialogue, so I played this version basically. But very, very good so far. I'm definitely going to finish it, and then I'm looking forward. I don't think I'm going to go straight from that into Rebirth, because that's a lot of Final Fantasy in one go. So I'll probably play that a little bit later. Did you ever jump on Final Fantasy at all? Like any of them?
I think I may have played one many, many, many moons ago, like, you know, back in the sort of PS1 days or something, but it's not a franchise I've particularly gravitated towards. I mean, I like RPGs, but the sort of JRPG stuff just didn't appeal to me massively. So it's not one I've, I mean, obviously I know of it, but it's not one that I've really gravitated towards at all. So no, I mean, you know, I'm happy they're out there and I know how much people love them. And I recognize the characters because they're all over the place. But personally, it's not one I play very much.
It's more particularly interesting with Cloud as well. He's kind of this closed off Mandalorian-esque sort of like ex-soldier, and he doesn't open up. And then there's moments where like one of the crew will say something, he'll smile a bit more. It's like, oh, your emotions are coming out a little bit, that sort of thing. And I like that sort of mysterious nature. So that's quite cool. The one show I have been watching, Young Sheldon, I think I actually have 2 episodes left or something, right at the end of the 6th season. I can't remember which season it was, whether it was 5 or 6, but both Netflix and Channel 4 took a long, long time to add those, and I ended up with a lot of episodes left. But I'm getting caught up now. I know that the 7th and final season, I think it's just started airing in the US, which a lot of people said, you know, a bit of a shame that it's coming to an end, but they're looking to do the other spin-offs. The thing with Young Sheldon, it was people that thought, oh, you're dragging out Big Bang and it's got, what, 12 seasons and those sorts of things. And then you come along with Young Sheldon, and sometimes I understand if you look at a franchise and think, wow, you're still making more of that. And people look at Walking Dead and say, hey, you know, why are you doing Fear the Walking Dead and all this kind of stuff, making franchises. This show does have a really, really good purpose to it. And if you probably look across the whole franchise, Sheldon obviously is probably the main, you'd say is the main character. Ian, who plays the younger, but clearly getting older at this point, you could kind of tell, like, think of what it was like in the first season and how sort of grown up he is in this one. He plays a really perfect young version of Sheldon. I've seen a few photos side by side of like him and Jim. He's met Jim a few times, hasn't he? And they both look a lot like Sheldon, which is cool. Aside from how well cast Sheldon is, though, of course, you've got Mima, the nan, you've got the mom, dad, sister Missy, and a few other like neighbors and friends and, you know, people like that. George as well, the older brother, who we talked about before getting a spin-off. The show I really think is perfectly cast.
Yeah.
In terms of like, if you take what you've heard and seen about those characters later in Young Sheldon, and you see some of like Missy in that show, and George is in there as well, they do perfectly kind of represent what you think those younger versions are like. So it's been really, really, really good so far, and I'm really looking forward to seeing I never quite thought, let's say if you go back to season 3 or 4 or something, that I'd be looking forward to a George spin-off. But of course, we talked about that maybe coming along with his partner in that show as well. So I'm really curious to see what they can do there. And I hope that they can kind of retcon slash fix a bit of what they did with the older version of George, because I think that was a bit disappointing. Because this version of George, he's like, for somebody who's the character himself is supposed to be 17, the way he kind of steps up and is really adult and things like that is really quite surprising and interesting. So I guess looking forward to seeing where that concludes, where that goes. We know one of the major plot points, I won't share it here, but we know one of the major plot points time-wise that they've got to get to, which involves one of the main characters, how that kind of affects things. So you said before, they got two spin-offs in the work. One is the George show and one is another one. I think that's what you said before. So I'm wondering what that one could be. But then because the other of Sheldon's friends all come from very different backgrounds, you could quite easily do a young sort of show for all of them. I know that's quite a lot of shows, but I think that would be quite good. So, did you ever jump on that? You did at least watch Big Bang, didn't you?
Yeah, I watched Big Bang. I might have watched an episode of Young Sheldon, but I didn't sort of get into it the way that a lot of people have. I know it's hugely, hugely popular as well. They've got two spin-offs incoming. One's been done for CBS. I'm not sure whether they've been ordered to series, or I think the CBS one has, which is the George and partner spin-off. There's that one. He's been done for CBS. There is another one which we don't know anything about, which is being done for Max, and that apparently is still in the works, but it's much farther behind in development process, so that may or may not happen. But there are apparently two Young Sheldon spin-offs in the works right now. I'm not sure whether the Max one is a Young Sheldon or a Big Bang spin-off actually, but I think they were both Young Sheldon spin-offs. They are still developing other things coming along. I mean, you know, they've successfully turned that into a franchise, I think it's fair to say at this point.
Yeah, but no, very, very good so far. And yeah, I've got 2 episodes left. And then whenever E4, or if they still have it, or because sometimes you just don't know, do you? Whenever they decide to air the 7th season, I'll look forward to that. That's a shorter one. I think that's 12 episodes. But I think you can still get to where you need to in, let's say, 14 if you do 12 and then the 2 that I've got left. So cool. That's what I've been up to until Extraordinary comes out, which I'm very much looking forward to, by the way. So on Wednesday, what have you been doing, David?
Well, I went on to Netflix having to talk to Daryl a little bit about it last week. Last Airbender, Avatar The Last Airbender, which is on Netflix in a live action version now. I will start this by saying that I've never seen the anime, so I'm coming at this completely fresh. I knew little bits about it, but nothing major. So I didn't know the story, nothing really. All I knew, it was had a little kid in the lead role. And for those of you that you don't know anything about Avatar Last Airbender, you're following Aang, who is this kid who is the Avatar. And basically the world that they're set in, you have these different tribes that control different elements. So there's a water tribe, an earth tribe, a fire tribe, and an air tribe. Aang is a member of the air tribe, and they have an avatar who's basically reborn each generation, and he or she is supposed to be the person that keeps balance within the world. In this particular instance, the avatar goes missing for 100 years, and that allows the Fire Nation to dominate the landscape, and Aang is then charged with trying to bring balance back. That is essentially what he's trying to do. He teams up with a couple of siblings from the water tribe called Katara and Sokka, and they have a big fluffy kind of flying mammoth thing that they ride around in. I really rather enjoyed it. I mean, it's clearly, you know, it is based off an anime. It's not perfect, and some of the dialogue is a little bit cheesy, and I don't know whether that's from the original anime. I'm not sure. I know there are certain memes like the cabbages guy. You may have seen that meme kicking around. There's a street seller that sells cabbages, and there's a famous meme of him going, "No, my cabbages!" And they use that in this, obviously. That shows up. So they have got elements from it. There are, as Daryl was saying last week, certain things which were in the anime which they've transposed into the live action, but they've also made a few changes as well. I can't tell you what those changes are because I don't know. But as a show, judging it on its own, really quite enjoyable. I think it looks great. CGI is a bit mixed in places, but, you know, it does a good enough job. And certainly some of the combat sequences, particularly with the element stuff, I think they do brilliantly. It's kind of martial arts, but with particularly with the Fire Nation stuff, they're doing sort of, you know, kicks, but they're firing flames out of the kicks and stuff. It's just really, really nicely done. It's a fun story. The characters are quite likable. There are a lot of those sort of anime tropes that have come across in it as well. Quite fun. And I would definitely say it is worth watching, whether you knew the original or not. You might like it better having not seen the original, because like I say, I came to it without knowing the original at all. And as a show on its own, without doing comparisons, I think it stands really well. Very, very enjoyable. I mean, you know, certainly it is aimed at a more family audience, but certainly fun to watch. Have you jumped on this yet?
I was going to the day before yesterday, and then I got 10 minutes in and realized, okay, there's a lot of information being given to me, and I admittedly wasn't paying enough attention. So I'm going to just restart it when I go through Extraordinary, and then I'll go back to this and then watch it properly. So, yeah. But from the bits I did see and was paying attention to, it did look very good, particularly that fight at the start. So that was cool.
That's very enjoyable. Over on Disney Plus, I started Shogun, which has got two episodes up. This is an FX series. There was a version of this years ago, I believe, but this is the latest sort of updated version based on a series of books, and opens with a group of, well, they're a group of merchants, or claiming to be merchants, but it becomes fairly apparent fairly quickly that they're actually privateers. They are lost at sea. They've been supposed to be finding Japan because the Portuguese have basically already got to Japan. It's sort of ended up being this kind of secret that they've been holding. They've not sort of revealed it to the rest of the world. The pilot of the ship, so it's their navigator, after the captain dies, sort of ends up taking over. The ship ends up washing up on the shores of Japan. He is actually English, and the English are at war with the Portuguese because England are Protestant at the time and the Portuguese are Catholic. That's the character that you're sort of with and you're kind of following, and it becomes about him being introduced into this very strange kind of alien culture of Japan. Japan is basically sort of the start of a civil war, essentially, where there is peace at the moment, but the previous ruler has died. His son isn't old enough to take over. So there is a council of regents that are supposed to be looking after Japan until the son comes of age. And I think he's supposed to be about sort of 12 or something at this time, and he will only get to be ruler when he's sort of 16. There is a disagreement amongst the council. There is one against the other four. And this character that shows up, this English sailor, gets taken prisoner and ends up being integral in those political kind of shuffling that's going on there. It's based on the Shogun novel series by James Clavell. There are two episodes up at the moment. Really, really enjoyed what they're doing with that. If you like those sort of historical, semi-historical dramas, things like Vikings, Outlander maybe to a certain extent, although, I mean, that's not so much historical as sort of historical fantasy, but I mean, this is sort of historical fantasy as well, I guess. If you like that sort of drama, this is certainly one to go and look at. It's really high quality. Again, some of the CGI is a little bit shaky in places, but it still does a pretty decent job throughout. The Portuguese is done in English, whereas the Japanese is done in Japanese with subtitles, which I guess sort of makes sense. So you've got these sort of conversations going on where you've got translators involved and things, but they're supposed to be translating Portuguese and they're talking English. So that's the way that they've kind of set it up. But that makes sense. And it's pretty straightforward to follow the subtitle system. It's on Disney Plus now. There are two episodes out, and then it's going out weekly. Really worth taking a look at, I think, if you've not checked that one out.
If that's weekly, I might try catch up with that before 4 or 5 weeks goes past. We still assume that in these day and age that, like, when everything comes out, it's just dumped as a box set, because some streamers are still doing that. But if that's got only a few episodes out, I might try and catch it before more start coming out. So, because I am interested, but I kind of thought it was just all the whole season at once. So
yeah, no, it's coming out weekly, that one. So yes, worth going to to check that one out, definitely. The other new show that I looked at, which is very, very, very silly, is The Completely Made-Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. This is Noel Fielding in the role of Dick Turpin, the highwayman. It is a very silly take on the classic stories of Dick Turpin. He is highwayman. He sort of falls into the role. It's very much done. It was sort of in the same way of Our Flag Means Death, in that there is a very modern sensibility that is sort of put over the top of something that is set back in history. There isn't really much more to it than that, other than it is Dick Turpin. He is a highwayman. He has this little gang of people, and it's stuffed full of British comedy talents. There are people that just pop up, like Simon Farnsby, who's one of the guys from Ghosts, Paul Kay that pops up in there, Gus Kahn pops up in there, Greg Davies makes a guest appearance as well at one point. So there's all sorts of like major comedy names that just pop up in these like these small roles across the series, as well as Azim Chowdhury in there. Hugh Bonneville plays the thief taker general, who is the sort of main person that's trying to catch Dick Turpin. It's very, very, very silly, but quite enjoyable. I know people have mixed feelings about Noel Fielding sometimes because his humour can be a little bit out there, but I rather enjoyed this. I thought it was quite fun. If you want to go and check out an interesting, fun, historical, very, very silly comedy, Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin, I think has 2 episodes out right now, but that's on Apple TV Plus. You can go and check that out there. That's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
So we kick off the TV and film news with renewals, cancellations, and pickups. First cancellation is, of course, from Netflix, because Netflix. It's called The Brother's Son. Michelle Yeoh, I think, was in this one, but it was sort of an action comedy drama thing, canned after one season.
There's an interesting combination of things you've just named, because obviously we love Michelle Yeoh, we're familiar with Netflix and what they do, but I don't think I've ever heard of this show, so I don't know how those things ended up occurring.
Yes, it was Michelle Yeoh. It's really completely bypassed me. I don't think they pushed it particularly hard.
I'm trying to think recently when I've scrolled through Netflix if I've seen it, but I can't remember
popping up either.
No.
And I mean, the people behind it are quite good as well. I mean, Brad Falchuk was one of the people behind it, who is the co-creator with Ryan Murphy of things like Glee and American Horror Story and Scream Queens and Pose, and was produced on Nip Tuck. You know, I mean, he's a big name, but as you say, I'd vaguely heard of it because of what I do, but I don't remember seeing any real Netflix push.
No, me neither.
As I said before, and I know somebody commented on the website about this, of getting sick of the fact that, you know, Netflix release all these shows, then cancel them, and then people don't watch them because they're going to be cancelled after one season, which means that they're cancelled after one season because nobody's watching them. And it's this vicious circle, which we've talked about many, many times before.
It is, yeah, caught in a bit of a loop now. So. Yeah,
so yes. But that has gone. That's The Brother's Son. Also, they announced Alex Rider over on Freevee. The third season of that will be the final season, but they have given a date for that. So Friday, the 5th of April, that's going to be landing. I haven't watched the second season yet. I really enjoyed the first season of it. Second season, I hadn't got around to watching because it's on Freevee, and I just forget to go watch Freevee.
Just another one to, yeah.
But I mean, the great thing about Freevee is, of course, it is free, but it also slightly puts me off that there's no way of removing the ads from it. But third season they have announced is going to be the final season, which I can't say I'm overly surprised by that, because it's probably a reasonably expensive show to shoot is one thing. But Otto Ferrant, who is the lead playing the teen boy, is 27 years old. So I don't know how much longer he can kind of get away with playing a teenager.
Yeah.
So I think that may be an issue.
I didn't know
as
that,
well.
But
yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he wasn't that young when he took over the role in the first place, but I think he got away with it. I don't know how much longer you could sort of have him play a teen spy. It's been a great series. Certainly season one was very, very well put together. Season two, I think, got pretty decent reviews as well. So yeah, third season will be the final season of that. We're coming on Friday, the 5th of April. On the renewal side, over on Channel 4, they've announced an air date for Hunted Season 7. That's the one where they get a bunch of people and release them out into the world, and they've got surveillance things that hunting them. That one. So Sunday, 17th of March at 9 p.m. for that. That's going to be returning. So you can go and check that out over there. In terms of renewals, we've got BMF, which has been renewed for four seasons ahead of the third season premiere, which I think has just gone out in the US. No UK broadcaster for that at the moment because it was on Lionsgate Plus, which has sort of shut down in the UK, although the service is still kicking around on Prime, but they're not adding anything new to it. So yeah, I mean, the plan is to completely shut it down. Why they haven't shut it down off Prime as well, I don't know, but it is still available on Prime. I don't know whether you can actually sign up to it, but whether it's just there for people that already had subscriptions, I'm not sure. But yeah, at least BMF has been renewed for a full season, so hopefully some of that stuff will turn up somewhere else. The US soap Young and the Restless, which is one of the long running big US soaps, renewed for four more seasons over there, which takes it up to like 2028 or 29 or something over there. Gordon Ramsay's Food Stars has been renewed by Fox, which I'm not sure whether that version has aired over here, but it's interesting. The first season was shot in the US, second season is shooting in the UK, which might encourage, if it hasn't been picked up, might encourage people to pick it up over here. Presumably that's just because Gordon wants to work from home, I guess, rather than flying around the US. But yeah, they're going to shoot the second season of that over here, apparently. Grace, the John Sim crime drama, police drama thing that's on ITV, has been renewed for season five before season four has even aired. So that will be coming back. I think season four is coming relatively soon, but season five has also been ordered as well. And there was an interesting little one for Miss Scarlet and the Duke, which runs on Alibi over here. It's been renewed for a fifth season, but it will just be called Miss Scarlet, because the Duke, which was played by Stuart Martin, has decided he's not going to continue. It all seems very amicable. He basically just wanted to go off and do other things, and posted a lovely thing saying, you know, I'll miss the family, you know, I'll miss working with these people, but I just felt that it was time to move on to something else. So rather than cancel the show or trying to bring in a new Duke or recast it or whatever, they're just going to get rid of the character. He's going to go, and the show is just going to be called Miss Scarlet from now on. So but that will be back for a fifth season under a new name. Moving on to pickups and other news. Interesting one, Accused, which is the US remake of the British TV show, which was removed in that Paramount Plus UK purge a while back, has suddenly popped back up last week because it was removed during the purge before they'd actually put all the episodes up on the system, because there was still like four or five episodes to go. They've now added it back up with the whole of the first season onto Paramount Plus UK. So why they took it off in the first place, I have no idea, because they've added it back on again, which is weird. No sign of Quantum Leap, which is the one that we do actually want to reappear on there, because that's the one that most people have been asking for. But yeah, Accused at least is back on there for the moment, until they decide to randomly take it off again, possibly. But Accused at least is back on there with all the episodes for season one. So you can go and check that out if you want to go and catch it. But I would start watching it now, just in case it suddenly randomly disappears again. Sky Witness has picked up the WE Fox drama The Cleaning Lady, which stars Elodie Young from Daredevil, and it's coming the 11th of March. This is actually, I think, just about to start, or it just started its third season in the US, so it's been around for a little while. This is one of those, I think, has been picked up to plug some of the gaps that are left by the strike, because whilst all the shows are coming back, they've all got shorter runs, so they've got more space in the scheduling that they need to fill. So this has been picked up by Sky Witness. Follows a whip-smart Cambodian doctor, played by Lodi Young, who comes to the United States for medical treatment to save her ailing son. She soon discovers the path won't be as straightforward as she hoped. As the system quickly fails her, she's pushed into hiding. She resolves not to allow herself to be beaten down and marginalized and becomes a cleaning lady, in quotes, for organized crime. Using her cunning and intelligence, she forges her own path in the criminal underworld, doing whatever it takes to survive. So Lodi Young from Daredevil Hitman's Bodyguard is the lead. It's got Oliver Hudson from Scream Creams, Adam Canto from Designated Survivor in there, Martha Milan from The OA as well. So yeah, it's written by somebody who used to work on the 100, which good and bad, I think, when it comes to that, depending what season you watch of the 100. But yeah, it's been running for 3 seasons in the US, so you know, it seems to be going down well over there. Lodi Young's a good actress. It was one of those ones that I did look at and think, I'm surprised nobody's picked that up over here yet, because it seems like a reasonable concept and, you know, a fun drama.
So is she Colleen in Iron Fist show, wasn't she?
No, she was Elektra in Daredevil, the Netflix series.
Yeah. Have they mentioned her as one of the ones that are coming back?
Not yet.
I don't think she has yet, no. So hopefully in the future. I feel like we've talked about this show before.
We've talked about this before.
But it's just never been picked up here. Sounds interesting. I think she'll fit that role quite well. Could be quite good.
Yeah, it should be an interesting one, that. But 11th of March, that's landing.
Very soon.
Yeah, it's been quite a quick turnaround from it being revealed that they've picked that up and them airing it. I mean, that sometimes happens, but Sky Witness, that's going to be on. Interestingly, Netflix has ordered a medical procedural drama for the first time. I think they have Grey's Anatomy on second run rights over in the US, and that's been going down kind of well. So they said, well, why don't we make one of our own? That basically seems to be the idea. They've turned to Zoe Robin, who worked on The Equalizer in Hawaii Five-O, but this is her first own original show. She's the creator and showrunner of it. They've teamed her up with Carlton Kearse. Carlton Kearse is one of the people that was behind things like Lost and Lock and Key and Jack Ryan and Bates Motel and a million other shows. So you've got like a first timer with a very, very experienced showrunner. Mm. I mean, as medical procedurals go, it's sounding fairly straightforward. Set in one of Miami's busiest level one trauma centers as they navigate various medical emergencies. One of the lead roles is a young ER doctor called Danny, who is not yet cast, who is unexpectedly promoted to chief resident amidst the fallout of her own provocative romantic relationships. So that's so far so fairly generic medical relationship drama-y thing. There is one bit of casting who's Justina Machando, who was in Jane the Virgin and 6 Feet Under and Three Rivers, who plays Natalie Cruz, a brilliant and politically savvy doctor who oversees both administration and medicine in her role of chair of surgery and emergency medicine. So that's the only bit of casting they've got so far. Don't know when that's landing. It's called Pulse. But yeah, interesting area for Netflix to get into, because those procedural things are very much network fare. It's not something that they would, you know, I don't know how many episodes they're ordering of it, but, you know, these things are usually like the standard 22 episode season thing.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy or something, yeah.
So I'm not sure whether they're going to order a longer run of it or what, but I mean, interesting area for them to get into.
Yeah. The only other obvious question is how long will it last, but we'll get to that when the first season airs. That's always just the question when it comes to that. But yeah, like you said, a bit different from what, at least my knowledge of medical procedurals, most of them have gone down very well and worked. I mean, Grey's Anatomy is in what, season 25?
I don't think it's quite that high, but it's certainly getting there.
Trying to catch up with The Simpsons. They do pretty well. It's just, yeah, like I said, different for Netflix to try this time.
Yeah. So that's an interesting one, just because of where it is. If it was on a network, it'd be like, it's another procedural, but it's just odd to have that being picked up or being commissioned by Netflix, of all people. We'll see what it's like.
There's only 20 seasons of Grey's Anatomy, not 26.
There you go. Yeah. So yeah, that's called Pulse. Don't know when it's going to land, but I think they are starting to shoot it fairly soon. And over on the BBC, there was a crime thriller, which we've talked about before, called Verdi, which is from A. A. Dant, who wrote the novels as well, but he's also adapting it for TV, based on his beloved Detective Harry Verdi novels. But it's had a changing lead actor. When they initially announced it, it was going to be Doctor Who, Sacha Dhawan, and from a million other things Sacha Dhawan's been in, but he was the Master in the last incarnation of Doctor Who.
Oh, right. Yeah, just realized. Yeah.
Yes, him. He was originally announced as the lead in it. Unfortunately, he's had some scheduling conflicts and has had to drop out because he is quite in demand as an actor. Stars Nair, who was in Rebel Moon, he was also in Game of Thrones, played William Day, the reporter guy in the last season of Supergirl, if you remember that character.
I think I do. I don't know why, but I think I do, yeah.
Yes, just vague memory of the final season of that. So he's now going to be playing Harry Verdi in the lead, which interesting to see him in that sort of role, I think. I think Sasha was a good pick for it, but, you know, it's good on him for landing that gig. So we'll see. Somebody did post on, when I posted this on Twitter, there was like, really? He was terrible in Supergirl, but I don't blame him for that. I mean, the scripts in Supergirl were awful. So
sometimes it's not a fault of the actors, but a fault of the material they are given to work with.
Yes, yeah. And like I say, I mean, he was,
I will give you Henry Cavill's Geralt in season 3 as a prime example.
Yes.
Of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, you know, he did a good job with what he was given, but my God, the script on that third season was awful. So yeah, so Stars Nair is going to be Verdi for that. They announced some other casting for that as well, but you can go and check that out on the website. Other news stories, we've got another NCIS coming. They're happily expanding this more and more and more. This one I thought might be interesting to people that are fans of the original show, because Cote DePablo and Michael Weatherly are both reprising their roles in this as Ziva and Tony, who, bear in mind, I've never really watched NCIS, but I believe they were a couple and they were in the original show. I think Ziva was actually sort of half killed off when Cote left. Then they decided she wasn't quite dead and brought her back, and she did another mission with the NCIS team on the main show as a sort of a guest spot. Now they're coming back together to do a show. So she sort of ended that sort of guest spot when she came back, with her reuniting with Tony and their daughter in Paris. Since then, Tony and Ziva have been raising their daughter, Tally, together. When Tony's security company is attacked, they must go on the run across Europe, trying to figure out who's after them and maybe even learn to trust each other again so that they can finally have their unconventional happily ever after. What's interesting about this is it doesn't seem to be the standard NCIS format. It seems to be just taking two of the characters and put them in a wildly different situation. Because, I mean, the NCIS format is, here's an NCIS team, but it's in Sydney, or it's in wherever the other NCIS is set. You know, they're following a specific NCIS team doing their criminal investigation stuff. This seems to be a very different type of show following two specific characters. That's sort of interesting and slightly different to what maybe we've seen before with some of the NCIS stuff. It's being made for Paramount Plus, so that doesn't always mean that we get it here, because the international rights for the NCIS stuff go, like, there was a sort of touch and go about whether we get the Sydney one or not, but presumably we will get this as well. So yes, if you're a fan of NCIS and you like those original characters, then they're back for their own show. So you'll be able to go and hopefully check that out on NCIS. I think it's shooting soon. Go and check that out. Also on Paramount Plus, they've ordered another interesting, slightly eyebrow-raising one. It's a Ray Donovan-related series called The Donovans, but it's from Guy Ritchie and Ronan Bennett. And when I first sort of saw it, I thought, oh, that's interesting, they're doing a spin-off. But when you actually read the description, it seems like it's not a spin-off, but a remake set in the UK. I mean, that's what it reads like. So the description says, with the most powerful clients in Europe, the Donovans will see family fortunes and reputations at risk, odd alliances unfold and betrayal round every corner. Whilst the family might be London's most elite fixers today, the nature of their business means there is no guarantee of what's in store tomorrow. And it does say that it's loosely based on the hugely popular Ray Donovan. Guy Ritchie's directing and exec producing it. Ronan Bennett is writing all 10 episodes. He's award-winning screenwriter, novelist, and creator of Top Boy. So fairly substantial name that you've got behind it. Guy Ritchie, this seems very much going back to his sort of roots of London gangsters. I'm intrigued by this. I like Ray Donovan a lot. I mean, it was, you know, a great original show. This is just a slightly odd thing to do, because it doesn't necessarily seem to have any direct connection back to the original. It seems to be taking the original idea and sort of almost remaking it in London instead, which is odd.
Would that, because I've never seen it or anything, I'm wondering if that idea in itself would work, a hypothetical UK remake, like you're saying. There's no real reason why it shouldn't necessarily, because it's kind of just changing location. But yeah, curious to see what this one is like. Did you watch the original show?
I watched most of it. I think I dropped off it towards the last couple of seasons or so, just because it became a bit of a pain to find, or I missed it. Oh, and right. Then I can't remember whether I just missed episodes, and I don't know, for some reason I missed the last couple of seasons, I think. But the entire original show very much focused around Ray Donovan, and the interesting thing about this is it seems to be focused far more on the family. I don't know whether they're going to write it with similar archetypes to the original, or whether it's going to be set in the same universe and there's going to be any relation to it, or if it is literally a remake. It's sort of unclear. It just says loosely based on, rather than sort of a direct copy. But I mean, the title called The Donovans does rather imply that it's going to be more about the entire family than specifically following one lead. So there may be a few differences to the original Ray Donovan. And I mean, there's no reason necessarily why this shouldn't work in a London setting. I just think it's an odd thing to do. But anyway, yes, Paramount Plus have ordered it. So yeah, and I mean, as I say, Ronan Bennett, absolutely brilliant creator. I mean, Top Boy's was hugely popular. Guy Ritchie knows what he's doing when it comes to this sort of stuff. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see for that. But yes, it's been ordered to series, so we'll see when it pops up. Back onto one of your favourite subjects, The Last of Us. There has been four bits of casting they announced this week. I haven't played the second game, so you'll have to tell me whether these characters actually exist or not in the game. But Danny Ramirez, who was in Top Gun Maverick, Falcon and Winter Soldier, he played Joaquin Torres, who was the guy that Falcon kind of gives the wingsuit to, one of his wingsuits to sort of become the next Falcon when he becomes Captain America, kind of. So he's that guy. He's going to play Manny, who's described as a loyal soldier whose sunny outlook belies the pain of old wounds and fear that he will fail his friends when they need him most. Ariella Bera, who was in How to Blow Up a Pipeline, Runaways. In Runaways, she was Gert, the runaway that had the dinosaur. She will play Mel, who is said to be a young doctor whose commitment to saving lives is challenged by the realisms of war and tribalism. Tati Gabrielle, who was in You, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, she's been cast as Nora, a military medic struggling to come to terms with the sins of her past. And Spencer Lord, who is in Riverdale, Heartland and Family Law, will appear as Owen, a gentle soul trapped in a warrior's body, condemned to fight an enemy he refuses to hate. So those are the four characters. So you've got Manny, Mel, Nora and Owen. Are those original creations, or were they...
All four of them are in the game to varying different degrees of screen time and stuff. But
right.
Yeah, all these descriptions are actually very, very accurate now that I think about not just what they do, but what they say in the game and how they feel about certain choices and stuff. Yeah, they're all very, very good choices. It's interesting because the first game is essentially Joel and Ellie, of course, across the country and all that kind of stuff. And you sort of checkpoint to different characters, but you know, it's sort of this intimate journey between the two of them. And then the second game just kind of expands in this different way. And they add probably, I would say around, I've not actually counted, but around 15 to 20 characters probably. And they've still got, I can say the names of other characters, kind of, that's not, that's not a spoiler. They've still got Yara, Lev, Isaac, who's played by Jeffrey Wright, Seraphite's leader. Then you've got Jordan, I guess. Leah, who people really, really apparently excited for, even though she's on screen for like 2 minutes. Leah's there. Seth, I don't remember Seth being in the first game or the first season. Seth is there. There's a couple of dogs, which are quite cool, but I doubt that you're going to see news of so-and-so cast as dog or something. But you've got a couple of, dogs that play like a surprisingly big role, but that's quite nice. And then a few others. The other one that was really interesting to me, they've cast Catherine O'Hara in this second season. Now, when I initially saw a photo of her, and they just, at the time, they said, oh, Catherine O'Hara is joining season two of The Last of Us. A lot of people guessed, oh, she could be the Seraphites leader. And I thought, okay, that worked quite well. She's the mum in Schitt's Creek. And then they said she's playing a brand new character. And I did a recent bumper episode combining a few different thoughts on different things like the Lost Levels and Part 2 in the casting news. And I can't for the life of me work out who she's going to be playing. But that's very interesting. So that'll be very, very cool. But yeah, it's exciting to see, to try to kind of, because I remember all the scenes and, well, not all the scenes, but a lot of the scenes. And to try to look at these people's faces and envision them playing these characters, delivering certain, you know, iconic lines and stuff. And that's been quite fun to do. But you got to keep going. You've still got 6, 7, 8 or so people to put in. So I'm very excited when that's going to happen.
Yes, it's going to be interesting in terms of how these people show up on the cast list. Because one of the things I found fascinating for the first season was Pedro and Bella were the only two main cast in that first season because of the fact that they move on every episode. Everybody else is guest cast. There's no reoccurring roles. It's literally two main cast and a bunch of guest actors. It's going to be interesting for season two whether you actually get any recurring roles or whether they're all guest cast again and Bella and Pedro are the only leads. Because, I mean, that's one way of keeping your wage bill down, because guest actors are paid at a different rate to recurring characters that are paid at a different rate to leads. So... That's a sort of interesting way of justifiable in this particular case, certainly for season one, because of the fact that these characters are not around, you know, with the possible exception of Gabriel Luna, but even him as Tommy was only in a couple of episodes for short periods. And, you know, Anatole as Tess, again, isn't there throughout the whole season. She's only in for a certain amount of episodes. It's kind of intriguing.
I would say probably if you were to add to the main cast in terms of what you're talking about, I don't think I'd include Jesse, but definitely Dina and Abby, I'd say should be considered main cast. It depends how the TV credits work and stuff, but yeah, those will probably be the two that would stand out for that.
Yeah, it's whether they add them as keep them as guest cast or add them as main cast or add them as recurring characters. So we'll see. I mean, it won't make any difference in terms of the show or what they're doing with it. It's just from a technical point of view, I found that kind of quite fascinating because it's so rare. Just
are they the only two that are in every episode? I think
Pedro
so, yeah.
And Bella, yeah. And they're the only two that are listed at the moment, or certainly for season one were listed as main characters, which, as I say, for season one does make sense because they're literally the only ones that are there absolutely every single episode, and those are the ones you're following. So it'll be interesting moving forward to see. I am looking forward to the second season of this, obviously. We'll see when it drops, but that looks like it's going to be great. There is one more story as well. Apple TV have announced another major and highly complex sci-fi series. They're adapting William Gibson's Neuromancer. If you don't know the book, the series follows a damaged top-rung super hacker named Case, who is thrust into a web of digital espionage and high-stakes crime with his partner Molly, a razor girl assassin with mirrored eyes aiming to pull a heist on a corporate dynasty with untold secrets. So that's the little strapline for it. It is a hugely complex book in the same way that Foundation is a hugely complex book. So, you know, they've done it once. They're looking to do it again. It's actually the same production company behind this that is behind Foundation as well, or one of them anyway. They're involved in it. Graham Rowland, who worked on Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan and Dark Winds, and J.D. Dillard, who worked on The Outsider, Slight, and Devotion as well, are writing the adaptation for it. Pretty solid names in terms of people that are doing the adaptation of it. The production companies for it are Skydance Television, who, as I say, did Foundation. They also did Big Door Prize as well. Anonymous Content are also involved, who did The Savant. They're doing Taika Waititi's upcoming new iteration of Time Bandits for Apple as well. And they did Last Days of Paloma Gray. So a couple of decent production companies behind it, decent writers involved in it. And I kind of feel if anybody can pull this off, given what they did with Foundation, it's Apple, you know, so.
Yeah, because that was probably no easy feat. Incredible show, Foundation. But hopefully that's going all right, because they had to stop for a bit or something, didn't they?
Yeah, so they've had to stop. Foundation has had a few changes. It's got somebody else coming in as director, although the original guy is still serving, has still been writing it, I think. But they've had a few things move around. I think it budget had got a little bit wildly out of control, so they were trying to sort of reset that. I think we mentioned last week that they literally got to the point where people were convinced screening ready to film, and they went, no, everybody go home, we need to sort this out before we can start filming.
Mm. I'd rather sort it out and do it properly rather than, because you can't rush a show like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't rush any show, but not something like that. But yeah, this sounds like it's got a lot of good things going for it. Sounds good on paper. We'll have to see what it's like.
Yes, definitely. William Gibson's Neuromancer was the first in a trilogy of books, so there is other stuff to work with, and we don't know whether this is going to be the whole first book or whether it'll get split up, but I mean, there is potential maybe there for at least three seasons. I think it's an interesting one to tackle, and it's one of those things that you look at and go, that possibly unfilmable, but then we would have said that about, I mean, you know, Foundation really should have been unfilmable, and they've done a phenomenal job with that. So yeah, we'll see how it goes with this. Don't know when that's going to land. It's probably a few years off, I would say, at this point. There's no casting for it yet either. We'll see where it goes. But they have announced that Neuromancer, a TV series, is coming for that. That's all the news we've got for this week. Just some highlights for next week on TV. Next. So, highlights for next week on TV. We have, as we alluded to earlier, Extraordinary returns for its second season on the 6th of March. It's brilliantly written by Emma Moran and follows the story of Jen, a young, self-aware woman who lives in a world where everybody has superpowers except her. And things are going to get interesting, I think, with the second season. The first season was absolutely hilarious and brilliant. It's very, very British in its sensibilities. I loved the first season of this. So yeah, 6th of March for that. It's coming on Wednesday. Extraordinary Season 2. If you haven't got Disney Plus, Extraordinary Season 1 is on ITVX, so you can go and watch that there. You can also get it all on Disney Plus as well, but it is on ITVX, so you can go and watch it there as well if you haven't got a Disney Plus subscription. I urge you to go and check it out because it is very, very funny. Speaking of Guy Ritchie, as we were earlier, The Gentleman, which is his new series based on the movie. It's sort of continuation of that. The Gentleman Season 1, that starts on the 7th of March on Netflix. So inspired by the original film, you can go and check that out there. How To with John Wilson, the third and final season of that, comes on the 8th of March at 11:05 p.m. on BBC Two. That's John Wilson, the comedian, attempts to give advice while dealing with his own personal issues. That is the final season of that. John decided that was going to be the final season. That wasn't a cancellation. He just decided he didn't want to do it anymore. It is, of course, the Oscars this week as well. So 10th of March at midnight-ish. Check exactly when they start the red carpet stuff, because it may be a bit before then. But basically midnight on 10th of March. It's going to be on ITV this year, because it previously had already been on Sky. You can go and check it all out on ITV, so everybody will have access to the Oscars if you want to stay up really late and go and watch it. Oscars start midnight on the 10th of March. You can go and check that out. Sunday night, Monday morning, that is. And The Cleaning Lady, as we mentioned earlier, on 11th of March at 9 p.m. you can go and check out that new show on there. Some good stuff, interesting stuff coming this week. Extraordinary, we would both be definitely checking out. I don't know whether I'll watch the Oscars live, but I will definitely go and check that out. We have got Grey on the show next week, so talking films. So we'll be talking a little bit, I'm sure, next week about the Oscars as well. If people want to find more of you, Matt, where can they find you?
You can head over to entertainmenttalk.org or podcast platforms of the same name. TV, games, films, main night podcasts. Actually a lot busier last week than what I thought I was going to be. There's a few main night podcasts. Of course, we played City yesterday. So that went how it went. Did a who should stay and who should go type podcast. I thought we were due for that because there's a few players that just need to go away. Did an episode called Curious Case of Bruno Fernandes, which is basically like focusing on one particular player in the team. I did a Bumper Last of Us podcast, which has got spoilers in the second half, but the first half is talking about the casting and those sorts of things. My thoughts on the three lost levels they included, and also some new thoughts that occurred to me while playing part two, particularly the ending, which a new thought occurred to me there. What was the thing I did? A new chat podcast episode. Some other stuff I may even be forgetting. A gaming talk we, of course, are still doing. We recently had our 350th special episode. We've gone past that, but we were savoring 350 for a special time. That's a retro special episode. We had Game Mistress Teresa. She was a special guest on that with us, so that was really good to do. And yeah, some other stuff we're doing and working on, and always stuff going around. So is that Twitch. You can follow me over there if you want to, eTalk UK on YouTube is Entertainment Talk Plays. That's for the video game stuff. That's me at the moment.
Excellent. So go and check Matt out on entertainmenttalk.org for lots and lots more podcasts. Go and check him out over there. As we've been mentioning, Bex is on hiatus at the moment, so you won't find her online anywhere right now. She's doing fine, but having a bit of a break from everything. And Daryl, you can go and find HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV series that you love, which are shot in Canada. For us, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, Blue Sky at Geektown, Instagram at Geektown UK, TikTok at Geektown UK, and Threads at Geektown UK. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.